Hello, welcome to the Viva Politics podcast, a podcast about the intersection of politics, media, and pop culture, hosted by a Generation X veteran political consultant, Dr. Lara Barbarena.
That's me.
And the Viva Politics office millennial, Lauren Coronado.
That's me.
Hey, we have a special guest in the house today. I'm very excited. We have with us none other than J.R. Treviño, who is the mayor of Castle Hills. Welcome, J.R.
Hi, how y'all doing?
So first of all, you are the first Hispanic mayor ever elected to Castle Hills. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And where is Castle Hills exactly, for those who don't know exactly where Castle Hills is?
Castle Hills is in the northeast area of San Antonio. We're right in the by crossroads, about 5 minutes from the airport.
Great, great. And full disclosure, JR is one of our clients, so we've had the pleasure of working with you on your campaigns for election. But Castle Hills is just a very interesting area, we shall say. It only consists of, what, 3 voter precincts? Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in running for politics. I know you've done some leadership programs and other things. So just a quick bio of who is JR Treviño.
So, I've done several leadership programs here in San Antonio. My family and I owned a small general contracting firm, and that's what I did for the majority of my time. I've lived in Castle Hills for about 10 years, and about 4 years ago, I started getting involved and kind of found myself at a point where if I didn't like the way things were going, I could do something about it. And so I started getting involved. I ran for council and brings me here today.
Great. Now, was anyone in your family ever political, like your parents, or did anybody run for office before or anything like that?
No, the furthest thing from it. Like my parents and the way that my grandparents are is kind of, you just kind of take what's given to you and make the best of it. Ironically, I've been doing some family history on Ancestry, and I found out that I don't know how many greats was actually a council member in Laredo where my family's from on my father's side.
Really? Oh, so it kind of is in your DNA.
And I didn't even know it.
So a little bit, you know, we have a whole bunch of topics I want to talk about today. But first, I want to talk about winning and losing and what that feels like. Because you're like in a rare club, right, Lauren? Where
you've won and you've lost.
I feel so lucky.
So I want to talk a little bit about what that feels. So just to give context to folks, you ran for city council for Castle Hills. It's actually an alderman seat, and you won. Then when you ran for re-election, you didn't win. Then fast forward, you ran for mayor, and you won. So it's a kind of a seesaw a little bit effect. Tell us a little bit about what that felt like emotionally, because I think a lot of times people, when they consider running for office, it's like, how do you handle winning gracefully, and how do you handle losing gracefully?
It's definitely interesting. I'm a firm believer that everybody should serve in some capacity, whether elected, appointed, or any other one that exists, only because it's incredibly insightful. It's humbling. It thickens your skin. I mean, there's a wide variety of things, and losing is the same thing. You know, I wouldn't encourage everybody to lose.
Sure.
I'm positive. But at the same time, it's just there's things that you wouldn't understand unless you go through it. Mm-hmm. And I think losing a race is one of those things. And the way that you feel, and you either you're going to come back stronger or you're going to go a different direction. And for me, fortunately, I've had people in my life that helped me come back stronger. That includes y'all.
Oh, thank you. So you didn't like go lay on the couch and eat a box of bonbons and say, I'm done with this. You actually picked yourself back up and...
Well, that, just for one day.
Okay, good.
You get one day.
You get one day. Well, we're sure glad that you decided to just take one day and get back into it. But, you know, Castle Hills elections, because it's such a small voter precinct, just 3 voter precincts, it's just a different animal. And it almost feels more like you're running for high school president than you are running for mayor, city council, doesn't it? I mean, everybody kind of knows each other's business.
To some extent, I think the biggest issue is the, as you call it in air quotes, the universe is so small. I mean, there's only so many voters. that are registered and that are going to turn out. So you really have to capitalize on everybody that's there, and you have to get to know each other. And the city is so small that information, good, bad, or indifferent, spreads very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's very rumor-based, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And you pretty much block-walked the entire city, if you will, yourself, right? You had the opportunity to do that.
I did.
And what's that like, going door-to-door? You know, what was your shtick? How did you talk to people? What would you say? Hi, I'm JR. I want to be your mayor. Like, what would you say?
So on a sidetrack, I did telemarketing in high school for a while. And one thing that I learned is you can't have a script, because as soon as you have a script and you try to start on that, somebody will throw you off and then you're left confused. So each person that you talk to is a little bit different, and you have to understand what they care about and kind of go from there and explain to them why you're going to be a good option for them.
Cool. And what do you think some of the more challenging door knocks that you've ever had? I mean, because I know, you know, running for mayor is a nonpartisan race. So I know a lot of times the first question out of someone's mouth is, are you a Democrat or are you a Republican? And it's hard to get people to get off of those partisan frames of putting a candidate in one of the other camps.
And so as soon as you asked me what's the hardest situation, I immediately thought of that one. And I remember exactly where this gentleman lived, and I got to his door and I gave him my push card. And the first thing he asked me is like, Republican or Democrat? And I said, well, you know, sir, Castle Hill is nonpartisan. And he said, okay, yeah. Okay. Enough with all that. But what's the truth? And I said, well, you know, I really don't have an opinion. I'm more independent. And he said, well, if you had to lean one way or the other. And I said, well, you know, I kind of lean this way. And he's okay. And he gave me back my push card. And I was like, whoa. And like instantly I kind of blacked out like an old school. And my instincts took over. And I said, well, sir, can I ask you one quick question? He's like, okay, what do you want? I said, if my opponent was leaning the same way as me and we're the only ones, what would you do? He said, well, I guess I would have to learn more about you. And I slid my push card back towards him and he kind of took it and just smiled.
Yeah. It's really kind of unfortunate that a lot of people will shut the door on you just because you're a Democrat or Republican. It's really disappointing that people are a little bit more open-minded, but especially on these municipal races where they really are nonpartisan races, because a pothole isn't a Republican or a Democrat, it's a pothole.
The pothole at the end of your street.
No, and y'all are absolutely right. You know, I think I did a bit with Senator Menendez where he was talking to mayors from small municipalities. And it was one of those things that he said, potholes don't have parties. And that's kind of the truth, you know. And in a municipality, it's more nuts and bolts than it is in the bigger cities where they have more discretionary funds.
Well, it's funny because when you talk about municipalities, when I was thinking about, wow, when I introduce JR the mayor, I wonder what people are going to think. Well, first of all, they're going to think of JR in Dallas, but that's not the same JR. But, you know, when I think about like, how are our concepts of mayors and municipalities, like what are they informed by in terms of pop culture? So I started thinking about like, how are mayors portrayed on television and in the movies?
And how does that compare to your experience as the mayor of Castle Hills?
Yeah, well, first, you know, typically like in the big screen films, you know, if it's a mayor of at least in the movies, typically it's a mayor of a big city, right? You know, or they'll have like the mayor of New York. Or the mayor of some obscure city is usually, you know, looks like George Clooney or something, right? Not that you don't look like George Clooney. Y'all can all Google him. It's J.R. Trevino. but you know, and I've also kind of thought like, well, on TV, typically mayors of small municipalities tend to be very quirky characters, like on Parks and Rec.
Hallmark movies, my favorite.
Yeah. Hallmark movies where municipalities, it just seems to always magically, like snow on Christmas Eve, it's like magic. Mm-hmm. And they're all sort of like really quirky. I also like, what is that? It's on Netflix right now. Schitt's Creek.
What's it Schitt's called? Creek.
Schitt's Creek. Yeah, so Schitt's Creek, they have like this, it's like this little rural municipality mayor, and he's kind of quirky. And so
I feel like quirky is an understatement.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, portrayals of mayors of small municipalities on TV tend to be very rural oriented, right? So they're mayors of a small town mm-hmm. in the middle of nowhere. But you're a mayor of a small town in the middle of a big city. And that's so different than what we're used to seeing on TV.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people that I've met outside of San Antonio are kind of surprised when I say, oh, I'm in the middle of San Antonio. They're like, wait, what do you mean the middle? I'm like, literally in the heart of San Antonio.
You're not the mayor of San Antonio, JR.
I know that. Thanks for the reminder, Lauren. And they're kind of surprised by that. But there's a handful of cities that are kind of in a similar situation as Castle Hills.
So, and we were talking about this before we went on air, like, if Castle Hills was a TV show or a Netflix series or a movie, what would it be like? So, I mean, what's the closest thing to what you've experienced being the mayor of Castle Hills? Is it been like? And you're not to allow us to use any references to horror movies, by the way.
Okay. Well, I truthfully don't watch a lot of TV or movies for that matter. I guess serving keeps me pretty busy. But lately, with everything that's been going on in Castle Hills, it kind of feels like a reality show.
Yeah.
I'm telling people what's going on. They're like, no way. That really did happen. And I said, well, I mean, yes. I mean, I can't make this stuff up. And, you know, we find ourselves in a situation where we're going to our state resources and asking them for guidance. And they're saying, well, I don't know what to tell you. We never had that happen before. And I said, well, it just happened in Castle Hills. What do we do now?
Yeah, that's got to be a big challenge. And I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about more about governance. Like, what is it like to govern in a small municipality? Because one of the things is, even though you're the mayor of Castle Hills, you don't have a vote on council, right? So explain that a little bit to folks that are listening in.
So Castle Hills is a type A general law city, and in Castle Hills, the mayor does not vote. The mayor is responsible for running the meetings, setting the agenda, confirming the agenda, and he can vote in a tie, but generally speaking, I do not vote. I've been doing the best that I can with that position and just running the meetings, trying to be efficient so that I'm not wasting staff's time or residents' time. Just trying to run it and move on and keep on going.
So how does that, I mean, is that something that could ever change? Could you ever change that the mayor has a vote, or how does that work? I mean, when the city was created, it was created under a charter, and the charter sort of dictated these guidelines, right? It also dictates how many seats there are, right?
Correct. You know, we don't actually have our own charter. We fall under the Texas Constitution, I believe. So a lot of it's kind of laid out there, and some of it's based off the size of the city, how many residents are in there. Mm-hmm. You know, over 5,000 is considered home rule, and they have a little more autonomy, whereas we're general law, and we don't have as much.
Now, you haven't had an opportunity. You sit on a larger, like, organization of other municipalities. It's like a governing board. Explain what that is, and how does that board work with other large cities?
There's a lot of acronyms. So, you know, one of the ones that I'm a part of is ACOG, which is the Alamo Area Council of Governments. And that is a monthly meeting of mayors and city managers. Kind of going back to your question about governance, one of the things that I've learned is we all have the same issues. They're just a little bit different. And that's kind of where I've learned that it's beneficial to talk with the other city managers and the other mayors and the other council members, because, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel, and there's no reason that we should, when we can talk with some of our colleagues in other cities and see how they solved them and solved their issues and try to go about that the same way. I don't know if I told you, recently I was elected as vice president for Texas Municipal League. For the region.
Cool. That's exciting. So what does that mean exactly?
So Texas Municipal League is the risk pool for a lot of the cities in Texas. And they provide legislative guidance and policy guidance. And they're basically in our corner to help us out. So Region 7 kind of goes to the west, kind of the southwest area of Texas, down to like Laredo. And basically it's just a group of cities that work together to provide continue education and basically a forum for other cities to talk and learn from each other.
And a lot of times you guys are like interconnected, right? I mean, because in fact, I know when during your campaign, one of the stuff that we talked about is the fact that because it's a municipality within the city of San Antonio, things that happen in the city of San Antonio actually affect you, like infrastructure, the way the water flows after a large rain. So if the city of San Antonio is doing a big infrastructure project, if you're not having a conversation with them to understand how it affects your neighborhoods, it can be really problematic.
No, absolutely. And, you know, that's one of the things that I was trying to share when I was running for council was that life isn't just in Castle Hills. We're so affected by what goes on around us. And that were that's one of the things that I was trying to do is leverage my contacts and not have to be knocking on a door and schedule an appointment, but say, hey, so-and-so is my friend. Can I meet with you to learn more about what we need to do? Just because there's a lot that goes on outside of the city of Castle Hills that does affect us.
Well, I think also one of the big challenges is how do you keep a municipality like Castle Hills, which is known for its charm and its huge trees. Trees are actually part of the city's logo, I think, because it's got these incredible trees. It's a beautiful, beautiful area. And, you know, how do you manage keeping the charm, but yet still maintaining, you know, economic vibrancy where, you know, it can be a place to work, play, dine, you know, really live, raise your family. You know, how do you find that balance? Because I know there's been talks of like bringing in a big retailer, for instance, so that it could boost jobs. But then if you do that, then you're bringing in a big box business and that changes the dynamics of the city. So I think it creates, we're unlike like a large municipality, you know, having a big box come in doesn't really affect anything because there's big boxes all over the city.
Sure.
But in a small municipality like yours, you know, I think that's definitely one of the challenges. It's like, you know, how do you keep the city, the small town vibrant, the municipality vibrant, but yet still maintain, you know, the charm of what is Castle Hills.
No, and I think, obviously, you know, we do have to balance that, but so does the city of San Antonio. They could turn, Jefferson Park? They could turn that into a skyscraper and make some money, but at the same time, you know, the park provides a certain value. It might not provide, you know, real estate, but that's part of the charm of that area. And that's something that we have to be cognizant of as well. And, you know, one of the things that I did when I was on council is pass a traffic impact analysis ordinance. And basically what that did is made big developments perform a traffic study to see how the neighborhood would be affected. Again, this isn't one of those things that I created up because I'm a genius. This was something that I saw that San Antonio was doing. And I asked the city attorney, I said, hey, this seems like it would solve our problem. And he looked at it and he said, well, you know what? That we can use the exact same thing. We'll just tweak it a little bit for the city and we can prevent issues.
So Castle Hills, if you've never been, people out there listening, you should go. What do you love most about Castle Hills? Like, what are some of the things that you enjoy doing? What is it that about the charm of Castle Hills that, because it seems to be one of those places where everybody's talking. It's kind of been like the buzz lately, besides the fact that it's been in the news for various reasons. But in terms of like living there, there's just something, there's a certain charm to the city. It's got like big lots. The homes are, you know, just, I guess, well-made. I mean, I don't know. What is it about Castle Hills that I think you, why so many people are really attracted to moving there now?
How much time do we have? I can tell you everything. No, it's a question I get asked a lot, and a lot of residents are questioning what's the value in Castle Hills staying a city? And very simply, I'll start off with why we want to stay a city. You know, we have our own police and fire department. San Antonio police and fire are great, but you can't compare the coverage area of 2 square miles versus 30 square miles. So we have a 2-minute response time for police and fire, and that's 2 minutes if you call for the most trivial of things or if it's the most serious. Mm-hmm. You know, you have an accident, police will show up and take a report. We also have a great public works team that they pick up the trash from the house. It's not like the trash trucks that are picking up with the machine. There's just a lot of value. One of the things that I have learned is that Castle Hills is kind of a culinary gem. You know, we have so many great restaurants, and it wasn't until somebody pointed it out to me, I was like, oh, I guess we do. For such a small city, I mean, we have Dough, Guajillos, Clementines, Sushihana, Tied to a Paz, Sawas D, and the majority of these restaurants are recognized in the San Antonio area as some of the best. So it's pretty concentrated.
Now you're making me hungry.
I'm making myself hungry. One of the things that was brought up to me, and I think it's a great idea, is doing like a Castle Hills Restaurant Week.
Oh, that's a great idea. If you need someone to serve on that board, I was like, I'll volunteer.
A taste tester.
A taste tester.
No, we just recently got a Pollos Asados too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know.
That's amazing. Well, you know, another thing of Castle Hills that I really, really enjoy is you all have your own fiesta event. So here in San Antonio, we celebrate fiestas in the month of April, and it's basically an excuse to party for a week here in San Antonio. But Castle Hills has its own event, and I discovered this because of you a few years back, and it's actually become one of my favorite fiesta events to go to because it's not yet discovered.
Yes.
Well, now you just told everyone about it.
I know. Please. Can you edit that out, please?
But no, so talk a little bit about that, and because it's free, first of all, and you have a little parade. It's kind of cool.
Well, and so if you're not from San Antonio, you wouldn't know this, but fiesta can be a little crazy. Imagine the biggest party that your city has, and then we do this for a week all over the city and different causes, different purposes. But the bottom line is they can get a little bit packed where you're bumping into people and it kind of turns into a mess. And
then it's just not fun anymore. After a certain point, NIOS is just not fun.
Exactly. And so, you know, that's kind of the beauty of Castle Hills is it's really family oriented and nothing is in a really condensed area. It's kind of spacious and there's not a lot of people there so that you can enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty family centered.
And it's got a little parade, which I think is super cute because, you know, sometimes dealing with the parades can be extremely stressful, especially if you got like a large family and a lot of kids. And so the Castle Hills Parade is great because if the kids are small enough, they still get a sense of a parade, but you're not having to go downtown and fight traffic and pay $30 for parking, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. And the parade's 30 minutes, 45 minutes long. So you don't have to plan a whole day just to see the beginning and the end.
Yeah, yeah. So a couple of fun facts about you, which I would love to share with people, is that you've been in the parade.
I have.
Every year. And you don't rent a car. You don't rent a float.
No.
Your parade vehicle is?
My DeLorean.
You own a DeLorean.
I do.
What in the... This is the doors, like this is like Back to the Future DeLorean.
It is, and not cinema quality, but it's the same vehicle.
And you have a flux capacitor, don't you?
I do have a flux capacitor.
It's in the back seat.
It's in the back, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just don't push that button.
Don't push it.
I'm leaving.
Do you even know, millennial, what Back to the Future is?
So, yes. I didn't know what a DeLorean was. I had to Google that. But once it was the Back to the Future car, it clicked.
Who doesn't know what the Back to the Future car is?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, apparently a few millennials out there do not know.
I know. That makes me feel old.
I know. But one of the ways that you stay young is another one of your interesting fun facts of people that don't know about JR is... You're a pilot.
That doesn't keep me very young. Sometimes it's a little stressful.
So,
I really thought you were going to say marathon runner. I forgot you were a pilot for a second. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he does run.
I know.
He's done 5Ks. Oh, yeah. You do run marathons.
Half marathons.
You do half marathons.
Only half crazy.
And you travel all over the country to do those, don't
you? So, I like to live outside my comfort zone, and I don't like to run, and I don't like to travel.
So you do both. That makes all kinds
so
of sense.
So I ended up doing 15 half marathons all over the world with my best friend. That was just a really different way of putting myself out there. I mean, we went as far as Liverpool, down to Mérida, and I even had to go to Santiago, Chile.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and I didn't want to go to Santiago. Like, that wasn't the plan. Like, that, it's a 9-hour flight. I only went over there because halfway through our runs, I had done like 7 or 8 runs. I had fallen and I broke my ribs. And I had to miss a race, and that just threw off the whole schedule. And I didn't have a choice but to go to Santiago, Chile. So I went over there by myself, ran a race, and came back and finished everything last year in December.
That's exciting. And now, and you are a pilot, but you don't own a plane.
Right? I don't own a plane. I'm still getting my license, so I don't want to qualify as a pilot.
Okay, so you're a pilot in study.
Pilot in training.
In training, got it.
Yeah, and so that is one of the few things is kind of my selfish moment. I don't really have any other purpose for doing it than just for fun, which I think that's okay.
Yeah, considering that what I do for fun is go across the street and have a margarita, getting in a plane seems a little bit more interesting.
Well, it's fun for me. I kind of equate it to riding a motorcycle, which I like to do as well. There's just so much going on that you don't have a free second to worry about life. You're worrying about maintaining everything that you have in front of you, and it's kind of freeing for those minutes or those hours or however long.
Great. And I kind of, the last thing I want to talk about with you today is, so people who are interested in running for office for like a small town municipality, what advice would you give? Because it's definitely, would you say it's one of the hardest things you've ever done?
It's, I don't want to say the hardest, but it's definitely the most interesting, unique, rewarding. It's a lot of those. Like I said, I think everybody should do it in some capacity just because of the experiences you get, and you find out a lot about yourself, and you find out about the people around you. Kind of thinking about doing this podcast today, I always ask people, like, what's one thing? Give me your one takeaway from whatever. I love getting people's experience, because, you know, experience is what you get when you experience it, but education is what you get when you read it. So I want to learn about what people have seen. And the thing that I would tell people is that when you are running or when you're an elected, people are going to see you differently.
Really?
Yeah. Good or bad, they're going to see you differently than you see yourself. And I think that that's just something you have to be cognizant of.
Yeah. And I mean, we see you and we call you mayor. And I know, I think that must be a different feeling, right? Like, I know when I got my PhD and people would call me doctor, I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like suddenly I've got this new title, and obviously I worked really hard for it, but you know, it was interesting when people call me that, I do feel like, oh, it makes me feel a little different when people call me that versus just, you know, me. So I imagine like when people say Mayor Trevino, like they're going to have these preconceived notions of that quirky mayor in Schitt's Creek.
Oh no.
And I'm still struggling with, you know, the way that I should be, you know, right now as we're filming this, there's a storm going on. Is it Hurricane Dorian? Mm-hmm. And I was getting ready in the morning, watching the news, and they said, oh, we have the mayor from some area that was affected. And I was kind of walking away. I was like, oh, I wonder what he would say, because I guess I'm a mayor too. So so I literally sat there and watched this mayor give his comments on the situation, because it occurred to me, like, that could be me having to give an update. And I never even consider myself being in that situation. And that's kind of what I mean with considering people thinking of you differently. I don't hold myself any higher for being a mayor, but some people will expect more, or they might expect less. And I think that's just something to be cognizant of.
Well, Jay, thank you so much for coming in to visit with us. We really appreciate it. I know you're super, super busy, and I know this is a big time out of your day, so I really appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
And this wraps up this episode of Viva Politics Podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram @Viva Politics Pod, and you can find us on Twitter @Viva Politics. If you have
a topic or idea you want us to talk about, send us a DM.
All right. Thank you all for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks.